So, yes.
So we were saying before, you know, that therefore we learn, you know, that the water really, so yes, this knob that we were talking about, right? We had learned several weeks back that there is the possibility that the water, you know, even though she's guilty, but she's not going to show the effects immediately because of the fact that she has merit and other things. She was charitable, she, you know, whatever it may be. And so because of her course, or, you know, the fact that she would study Torah and things like that, that's also, you know, a reason for his course, so that it was Taylor. In other words, it suspended it for the time being. But eventually the idea would be, however, that if she were guilty, then even if it didn't happen this year, it didn't happen 2 years or 3 years, but maybe at the end of that, you know, so then these symptoms would occur. But here, she is not showing, you know, any deterioration in this area. She's showing a general bodily deterioration. So, but we should not consider that, and therefore it's proof of the fact, you know, that she was guilty.
Do you have any record of how often or whether this was ever used?
We don't really have any record of it.
Or whether it was ever used?
Oh, it could have been used. I'm not saying it wasn't. Yes, it could have been used. Because there's a reference in a different Gemara to the fact that a Jewish queen, Queen Helena, she gave a gift to the Beis HaMikdash of a golden tablet upon which the Parsha of the Sota was written, so that when the Kohen, you know, could see it, you know, he could have it in front of him and read it. So presumably that there were cases where this test occurred, but there are no statistics as to how often it occurred or anything like that. Today, needless to say, this is not a practical thing. I was a little bit surprised, for example, several years ago, there's a woman by the name of Naomi Reagan, lives in Yerushalayim, you know, American woman who settled over there, and she's written several novels. And one of the novels she called Sota. It's about a woman who is suspected of having committed adultery. There's a gansa mice over there. Naomi Reagan doesn't seem to like the right wing over there in Yerushalayim. There she are, people.
Did you read the book?
Yeah, I read the book a long time ago. Yeah. That was published, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. I forget already when. But, you know, there is no Sota today. She only used the title, you know, because it's the story of a woman who was suspected of committing adultery.
Well, there's no Sota because, yeah. I mean, it's really a miracle that you depend upon the first temple.
You're absolutely right, yeah. Yeah. It's not just the first temple, the second temple, too.
Second temple.
Yeah, we're talking, I mean, over here, essentially a second temple. But you're absolutely right that it is considered really a miracle that, you know, the water is able to prove this. It's a derech nes, no question. All right, now we come to some real sexy problems over here.
That's great.
Aisha Saris Shoisa. Now, Saris, as you know, this is a eunuch, okay? But as we'll see, yeah, here we're talking about the wife of a Soris, right? And he, you know, he's a eunuch, and he doesn't like the way she's behaving with another man whom he has warned her against her.
Eunuch.
He's a eunuch.
Married.
He's married to her, and he's a eunuch. Okay, we'll discuss that in a second. Okay, but this is what the situation is at this moment. Okay, so the question is, you know, can we say, you know, that, in other words, can he compel her to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim in order to prove her innocence, okay? In other words, is she like any other married woman in this respect, that if she wants to prove her innocence, after having been warned not to associate with this guy and so forth, not to be secluded with him, so she can establish her innocence? So we'll see. The answer is yes. But the Taka raised a good question. It says, Pshita, isn't this obvious? After all, she's a married woman, so shouldn't she? So he says, Malgut Heimon. What if you were to say as follows? Nibala de Yisheich. Torah says over there, any man who is not your husband, right? Malade Yisheich. So, Oba Rachmona, right? This is what the Torah says. Bahai lav bar hochihu. But he doesn't have the capabilities, that is, her husband doesn't have the capabilities of being like a man. So Kamash Malone, nevertheless, we learn that, you know, she's like any other woman, any other married woman in this respect, and she should, if warned and everything else, and then she should undergo the Maimon Orim. You're asking a very good question. Okay, you're asking a very good question. So for that, we have to take a look at Rashi.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Plus a little extra explanation. All right? Okay. Mibaladei Yishek, and that's where it starts. Well, it would be roughly about eight lines from the bottom of it. It says, you know, except for who is someone not a husband, right? So Mashma, right, the Isha, that her husband, Bahachi, right, that, you know, he's in this category, you know, so that he's considered a husband, he's considered Ish, but at the same time, what if you say that he's not? Because he's not really like a man in every respect. So Kamash Malon, right. The Mikdam Shechivas Baal, the Boel, who the Asa. Right? They have been proving several pages back that when can a husband have the right to go and demand that his wife be tested? That is when he had intercourse with his wife prior to any other man possibly having intercourse with her. But what if it was the other way around? What if, in other words, you know, she had intercourse with some other guy and then the husband comes along? He cannot call her to account, you know, for what she did prior to the getting married. Okay.
In other words, if she's a divorcee or something like that.
Yeah, a divorcee, or let's say she was an unmarried woman or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so he cannot call her to account for her having relations at that particular point prior to. Okay? Not retroactive, in other words, so to speak. Okay? That's what we mean by that the husband lay with her prior to the paramour. Okay? So. The Soris, he says, Bar Shechiva Hu, right? A eunuch, according to Rashi, he can lie with her. I guess it means literally lie with her, right? The Afal Gav Delad Bar Zariyahu, right? Even though he doesn't have any seed, literally, to ejaculate. Okay? And now he says, it was Soris Chamo Kofamah, Demuta Lekaimo. Now we're talking about what type of a eunuch? We're talking about a eunuch who we call Saris Kama. In other words, after being married, he suddenly suffered, you know, some kind of an accident that deprived him of the ability, you know, to...
Became
sterile, okay?
This is sterility by any means.
Yeah, right. So he is permitted, you know, to continue living together with her. But we're not talking, the law, he says, Bisoris Odom. We're not talking about a person who became a eunuch as a result of castration.
What's the
difference? Show also the Kaimon, because he would be prohibited from remaining married to her. Mishum de la Yovo Petua Daka. We have a pasuk in the Torah which says, Lo Yovo Petua Daka Hushavcho Bechal Hashem. That this person who is. Petzua dako, he's wounded in his testicles, right? Or krush shofcho, or in other words, it's been cut off, you know, so that he can't do it. In that case, he's not allowed to marry. So that's why it says that if he actually were a eunuch physically in that respect, then in that case, he's not allowed to marry. But the stories that we're talking about over here is the stories who, after being married, something happened to him that rendered him impotent, whatever it may be. But if he wants to continue living with her, he's permitted to continue living with her.
After marriage, then he has to get divorced.
Well,
I mean, it's not
down to the divorce.
Yeah, it depends. In other words, what is the nature of the what made him castrated, so to speak?
Well, castrated.
Right.
Is,
yeah. I mean, we always think castration only, you know, in the sense, you know, that. That they cut off something, right? Okay,
that's
the way we understand it, right?
He wouldn't be allowed to
correct. In that case, he would not be allowed to remain married to her.
What if a man marries a woman?
Yeah.
And after they're married, they don't have any children.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they find that he can't produce any sperm.
Right. Okay.
What is he, a eunuch then?
He may be in this first category that we're talking about, where Rashi says is mutar l'kayma, that he's permitted to keep her as his wife. In other words, he could have
been married. But isn't that grounds for divorce?
Well,
he's not a eunuch because he's still producing testosterone.
Right.
I mean, so is male hormone. You can have that the sperm is produced, but the hormone is produced. Whereas with castration, if your testicles are removed, you neither produce sperm nor
right.
hormone.
Right.
A woman
yeah.
can't have a child the other way around. You're allowed to divorce her. So
well, but the court could try to insist, you know, that if he were castrated, you know, that he should divorce her. Court could try to insist. I mean, this is, of course, would depend upon a bezdin that actually has the power to do something. And in our day, though we don't seem to have any bezdin that's capable of doing anything as drastic as that.
But you're saying, according to Torah, yeah, they yeah. really should do it if he's castrated after marriage.
Correct.
So
correct. Correct. As we said, I mean, this is the Swiss Odom, you see. But whereas with the other case, I mean, where, you know, something happened to make him sterile or something like that, okay. This is what it would seem, at any rate, okay?
I mean, there are various reasons why I'm sterile,
yeah.
But, the
yeah.
Brain, but
yeah.
diseases and things like that, you can be able to.
Yeah. Now, it so happens, we take a look at Tosfos, the first line gives a different interpretation. As you can see, not everybody is in agreement, you know, there are always different points of view over here. You take a look over there, you see where it says Eshasoris over there,
yeah.
near the bottom. It says Rashi Perish, says Vesoris Chama, below Vesoris Chama. You know, about Soris Chama, in other words, something happened, let's say he got burnt or something or other like that, so as a result of that, he became sterile. But, Lo Besoris Odom, which he takes in the sense of also the Kaiba, who do we mean that a Soris Odom, in other words, a eunuch, literally a man, a eunuch, is prohibited, so Lo Yadin Minalon, the Soris Odom, and we don't know what do we mean by Soris Odom, so they say, Kegon Shesosha Kosikorin, maybe. He drank some kind of a potion in order to make himself sterile. In other words, in those days, you know, they knew that there were certain herbs, either a man or a woman, that if they would take the kosikor and they would take, you know, the herbal treatment, you know, then they would become sterile. Okay? So, in this case, if the man made himself purposely sterile, then also the kaimon, right? So he would be prohibited from keeping her as his wife, okay?
Something like having a vasectomy.
Right.
If he had a vasectomy, he'd be prohibited.
Right. So at any rate, the Tosfos then continues over there and, you know, discusses different varices that they have. Imishim high varice, and the Meisim Perishen Mimonis, maybe because of this varice, which is brought also in the second chapter of Yevamos. Over Perika Oriel, on another chapter, and so on, Tsuadaka, Krushoka, Saris Oda, that, you know, that the Tsuadaka and the Saris Shofka, you know, what the Bible refers to, where, you know, a person who is crushed on the testicles or has had, you know, his member has been cut, right?
As a matter
right.
of fact, you can't even count
yeah.
to a million, can you?
Right. Well, doesn't become less of a Jew as far as
no, but you can't count him for a minute.
Why?
I mean,
it's written not to come in Bechal Hashem, but that means as far as marriage is concerned, he shouldn't marry. Doesn't mean that he can't be counted to a minion. That would be a misinterpretation of what
the
Pasuk is. No, it's a misinterpretation. Yeah. Okay, obviously, I mean, this is a matter that would have to go to the Bezdin for judgment. The Bezdin, you see, back in the old days, did have the power to try to force a man in order to give a get to his wife if she felt she couldn't live with him because of his, whatever his nature, either the physical problem that he had or because she didn't like the kind of work that he did. Give the example, for example, let's say a man who is a tanner, Okay?
He stinks
all the time. So she can't stand, you know, the stink around her at all times. She simply can't stand it. So in that case, she has the right to come to the best and ask that the marriage be dissolved. So...
But is it true that only the man can give a get?
Yeah, technically only a man can give a get. But in those days when the Besdin had power, in cases like this, they could come and they could apply pressure on him. As the Gemara says, koifenoso, in other words, they put pressure upon him. Achoime rotani, until he finally gives in and he says, I'm willing to give a get. Because that's what happened. The get has to be because he's willing to give the get, you see.
But that's not this particular case. This particular case is he's required to divorce. I mean,
you're absolutely right. Right. Yeah. Well, as I say, I mean, the problem is what kind of a soris are we talking about? Because as we see from the Mishnah over here, that, you know, soris. Right? That obviously there were people, you know, who were incapable. They had reached what we would consider a state of being a eunuch, even though physically they had, but, you know, they didn't, they were unable to produce anything, right? And, but at the same time, they did not force him, you know, to divorce her. The two of them could continue living together as husband and wife. Tosfos brings over here at the very last line over there, let's take the case of an old man. The old man, let's say, he's lost his power to generate. So does it mean he has to go and divorce? Of course the answer is no. He can remain married or something like that.
But
yes.
Still the other case, you said, about the actual...
Right. In that particular case, that's different, right? Because in that case, then it's also the kaiba that he should not continue, because there's no question. In one case, let's say, I mean, a man and a woman living together, there still could be intimacy with them, even though it doesn't always result in an act of sex. Correct?
Right.
All right. Whereas here, sex would be an impossibility.
Sexual desire, right? Because of the hormone change.
Yeah,
now they get testosterone.
Right.
What if she's beyond childbearing age? Because it wouldn't matter.
If she's beyond childbearing age? Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, I mean, if it happened, you know, later in life or something like that, then then they wouldn't apply. Okay. At least I don't think it would apply. I'll leave it up to the best.
Right.
Okay.
Onward.
Okay. Onward and up. All right. Last line on the page over there. Al yedei kol haroyes mekanin. Mishnah listed then that it says that a man has the right to tell his wife, "Do not seclude yourself with so and so," even though that so and so is a blood relative,
like a brother.
Yeah. Brother, a father, or those, you know, who fall in the category. Yeah, whatever. I mean, because...
So they were concerned about incest, obviously.
Could be. But he's being nasty, in my opinion. But listen, you know, unfortunately, you do read stories about incest occurring.
He could demand that, but he doesn't necessarily have to do it, demand it. He doesn't have to demand it.
No, it doesn't have to demand it. It's only if he's suspicious, he's warned it before the best, and remember, there's a whole procedure. First, he has to give a warning because witnesses have come and said this and that and so, and they come to the best and they register a formal complaint. And then after that, he says, don't you dare, you know, and so forth.
The jealous husband.
Sure he could.
Without witnesses.
Jealous of her
father. Yeah, right, correct. So the question is there any ground for believing him or not? Now, in some cases, the answer is yes. On the basis of his suspicion, because she has secluded herself, then in that case, there would be enough already to begin to initiate this business.
But the husband would have to prove that.
Yeah.
To the base then.
Right.
You said that to a woman nowadays, she'd probably divorce, she'd just be saying it.
Yeah.
All right,
so at any rate, this is what this Mishnah says, all right? So again, the Gemara says, Pshita, isn't this obvious? We would think, okay, look, she's a married woman, guy, a husband says to her, don't you dare be secluded with so-and-so. I mean, maybe it's his brother or
father,
a brother-in-law. Who knows? I mean, what's his tutzach, you know, unfortunately, right? Because they don't go in. I mean, Arroyos takes in a broad category of people who are prohibited by relationship, either through blood relationship or by extended arroyos. In other words, that because so-and-so is married to so-and-so, so that already the prohibition extends another step further and so on, you see. Of course, that's the way it works with the arroyos. So, mahu detema, what if you say, in the parsha of Sota, we find nit me'or, and it's written twice, tebiyomim, right? So, why does it say twice? So it says, echod lebal, in other words, to say that she is prohibited to her husband, right? The echod lebal, but she's also prohibited to her boyfriend, to the paramour, right? She's prohibited for both. I mean, as I explained to you, according to the law of the Torah, I mean, if a woman, commits adultery with a man, then not only is she prohibited to her husband, but she's also prohibited to the man with whom she committed adultery. This is the law. Whether it's enforced, veisachnish, but it's the law.
Right.
Okay? So, heichod kol mitzvah behoznus. All right. In other words, we might say that where it is possible that in this particular case, in other words, in an ordinary case, when she is prohibited to her husband because she has committed adultery, with a man who she's not related to, right? Avolha, but in the case of a person where she is, related by blood to him, let's say, Hoil Vasira Kayoma, inasmuch as she is always prohibited unto him, Emolo, we would say then in that particular case, since condition A, namely another man, other, right, can apply. So here where it cannot apply, we would say that therefore, in that case, the husband cannot insist that she go and she drink the vayim haborim. So, what do we say? Kamashmalon. Therefore, the Mishnah teaches us what? That makes no difference. He has the right to say, don't seclude yourself with so-and-so, whoever it is, and so on. And if he suspects, that she's gone, I mean, she has defied him and gone ahead and do it, then in that case, what? Then she has to drink the maim hamorim if she's going to prove her innocence. And this is what we're going to find in several more cases coming up. All right. Now, the Mishnah also says, however, this will not apply chutz min hakotan if a woman has sex with a minor. Question is, what is a minor? Right. According to the Gemara, in other places over there, a boy who is 9 and a half is considered mature enough that as a result of having intercourse that she would be prohibited. But earlier than that, it would be considered that, he doesn't really have the power. He's not an ish. He doesn't have the power of a man and so on. I don't know. Maybe they had an earlier puberty at times. Although still, I mean, the law of being, 13 in a day is the official ruling, okay? But nevertheless, 9 and a half was considered already capable of having relations with a woman. So, at any rate, why? So the answer is because ish omer rachmona velo katan. In other words, Torah says ish ki sista ishtoi, right? It's a man. So, in that case, then it doesn't apply to a katan. Vishayno ish, who is still not a man. Now, Gemara wants to know, however, the miyute mai. What are we excluding over here? So, ilemor, the miyute shachiv, or shachuf, the omar shmuel shachuf mikan al yodai. Alright. Gemara now introduces a new element. It says, maybe the fact that it's written ish, applies other cases, you know, where we would say maybe the law of Sota doesn't apply. Why? Because the man is not quite a man. So, what case are we talking about over here? So the answer is Shachuf. What is Shachuf? So, according to Rashi, oh, let's take a look and we'll see how Rashi defines it. Okay. Okay, Shachuf. You see on the side over there it says the common and the margin over there on the left. So you see the word Shachuf over there?
Yeah.
Okay. It says Shachuf, he says Shabsoro Nishchaf Vichole Viyodesh. All right. This is a man whose flesh wastes away, becomes dry, in other words, he loses his koyach. Okay? The Yainbo koyach, and he has no strength left. Ubetoras koyhanim, and Toras Kahanim is the medrash that we also call the Sifra. It's based upon the various halachas that we find in Sefer Vayikra. Okay? So, Biklolos, remember at the end of the Sefer Vayikra you have a Toichacha, right? Yeah. All right. So among the curses, Shoninu Dugmose, we learned something which is similar to it. It says, Yeshlecha Odom Shehu Chole. By Shoninu Dugmose, what he means to say is that the word is related to a word over there. The word over there in the Torah's Kahanim in Vayikra is the word shachefes, which is an illness. And, you know, what is the exact nature? So apparently it's the kind of disease where you just lose your strength and you waste away physically, okay? So, yesh lecha odom shehu choyle mita. All right, so he's a kind of a man who is sick and he lies in bed all the time. Aval besoro shomer olav, right? But nevertheless, you know, he still has enough flesh on him, in other words, to function like a human being. So Talmud Loma is a shachefes. Melamed shebesori nishchaf. So, all right. So here you have a case, okay, of a shachuf, right? Man who is wasting away, obviously he doesn't have any koyach to have any more relations with his wife, right? So we might think that what? That as long as he's married to her, he should not have the right to have a drink, the Mayim HaMorim, if he suspects her of having committed adultery with somebody else, right? So, V'omar Shmuel Shachuf Mikanon Al Yodo. Shmuel says that in the case of a Shachuf, a person in this condition, he still has the power to ask his wife, you know, to prove her innocence by drinking the Mayim HaMorim. Okay? Not only that, but Ufosel Betruma. He also has the right that if, let's say, he marries a Bas Kohen, then in that particular case, and he's unworthy of it, so nevertheless, he can cause her to, that is, if he is, let's say, if he is somebody who is not fit, remember the question was asked, for example, the daughter of a Kohen, okay? If she has, let's say, relations with a Goy, or with an Eved Meshuchrar, right, and so on and so forth, then automatically she is posel for Kehuna, right?
Right.
Okay. Now,
can't eat today,
she can, that. Right. But we also have another law concerning about the woman, you know, the Bas Kohen. It's written over there, Bas Kohen, Ki Siyeh Li Ish Zor. Okay? The daughter of a Kohen, she goes and she marries somebody who's not a Kohen. Okay? V'zerah ein law, and she has no children, right? Then it says, V'shovel beis aviho kinureho, and she's permitted to return home to her father, just as when she was, you know, a young woman. And then it's written over there, so melechem aviho tochel. She's permitted to eat, literally, the bread of her father. In other words, she's permitted to eat truma. Okay? But if a woman marries somebody who is not a Kohen, so he said, she loses the right to eat truma, right? So this is what he's saying over here. This guy, Shochav, he may be lying in bed and everything else, but nevertheless, being married to her, as long as he's married to her, she cannot eat truma. Post of the truma, okay? Because she's married to a non-Kohen. It's as simple as that, okay? Nor is she divorced and returning to her father's home, having never had any children. See? Because if she has children, then obviously that also would be posel b'truma. Okay. All right. So posel b'truma. So he explains. Mekanan al yodo, as far as the fact that they have the right, to cause her, to prove her innocence by drinking my mom over him, says Peshitta. That's obvious. Mahu de tema. But why is it obvious? What if you say the Shochav Ish Oiso Shikva Zera Omar Rachmona, right? The Torah says, and a man has slept with her, with issuing seed, right? So the Torah says, Beholav Bar Hochihu, and but he at this particular point is incapable of doing it, right? So in that particular case, nevertheless, Komash Malon, right, that nevertheless he can insist upon her, to prove her innocence. Foisel b'truma, as we said before, Pshita, isn't this obvious? He says, Mahu detema, what if you say Lo Yichalel Zaroi Omer Rachman? The Torah says in reference Kohayim that he should not make his zera, he should not make his seed, his children, his progeny, chalolim, in other words, make them profane. So the isle zera lechalil. If he has seed, literally, then he can. But the lesle zera, if he has no seed, lo lechalil, he would not cause, the woman, so that in that case, she should not have to drink the maimam orarim because it's not a marriage the way it should be. So kamash malon, nevertheless, that it is a marriage and so on and so forth. Okay, and then she should do it. Again, we'll take a look at the Rashi over here because, as you can see, it's quite complicated over here, really. Okay. All right. Mekanan al yodo kamove hevinen bo mekanan al yodo. All right. Foisa betulam pshito emhu echad na psulim. Yes. All right. Foisa betulam. What if this shochof over here, who echad ben absolim, he's one of those who are, unworthy of, unworthy of marrying a bas kohen or something like that, right? Anachalalin eso isha, and they caused the woman to become a chalol. I mean, she was the daughter of the kohen, but she automatically becomes a chalola because of having relations with him. Kigoin, as for example we said, Oivet Kechovim, a goy, right? Or Evid, right? A slave, or Cholol, or in other words, a male who is already the offspring of a Kohen and who is disqualified from being a Kohen because of his mother. Or Nosin, we said, these are the Nosinim, the Gibeonites, the people, yeah. Right? Or the mamzer, right? The kaimelon, the kedushin, the yomaves, and we learn the gemara and kedushin also. Yevomis the psulin, I would say probably what we should have to. Not only are they psulin, but I would say that probably we should read it also the pesulin, that they would make her the pesulin her isha the diyoson, right? Mevavatz kohen kseliyish zor kevon shenivalo lamisha zor it's lo psula from the moment that she became. That she had relations with a man who should not have had relations with because he is literally zor lo, he's strange to her, not a kosher person for her. So in that case he made it possible. And then it's written v'lo yachal zara, he says v'lo ksiv lo yachel, because it's not written lo yachel with only one lamed, darshinon shnei chilulim. So we learn that why are there two lamets over there? So the answer is because there are two different ways to make a cholol. What? Echad lo, she herself can become a chalola, the yechel zara, and her children too can become chalolim because of the, you know, an unworthy type of marriage or relationship that she had with other people. Okay? All right. So, Kamash Malon, Shmuel, so this is the reason why Shmuel comes to the conclusion, I'm still doing the Rashi, the posel, that, you know, that he makes her posel. Shamin and Lay, Mehod Omar, Mekanana Yodei, Shachuf. Right? Why? It follows, you know, from the fact that we already said that a Shachuf can also cause what? That she has to drink the Mayim HaRonim. Uvatskoyin, Lishkazor, right? Uminei, Nafkelon, Dipsulin, Pasle, Leishob, and Biyosan, right? We said before that from this we learned from the Pasek of Vatskoyin, Lishkazor, that they make this woman, puzzle that is in the unworthy because of having relations with her. Okay, this is already a little bit further on. Okay, which I'll explain in a second. Okay. Okay. Yeah, the first will be true. Pshita mahu the same or lo yichal azare. Omer achmona the east lezer lechale the less lezer lo yichal. All right. The elo lemiute oved kochav. Maybe we could say that. I don't know how, but the fact that it's written ish ish kises the ishto, right? Man, you know, becomes suspicious of his wife and he gives a warning, etc., etc. So, should we say that he doesn't have a right to tell her to fool around with a guy? Because so far we seem to be talking about Eden.
Right.
You understand, right? The Omar, Rav Hanunah says, Oved kechamin, kanan al yoda. Nevertheless, if he's a guy too, you know, also, woman, you know, can be tested with the Mayim HaMa'orim, right? Faisel b'truma, and somebody who also, you know, makes truma, makes it possible, so mekanan al yodo, right? So he says, pshita, isn't this obvious? He says, madu tatema, what if you say, nitmo shtepiyomim, don't we have the word nitmo written twice, echad de baal, the echad de boel, right? One prohibition is for her husband, the other one for her paramour. So heichod the kamitzara behoznus. So where, you know, as a result of this in this particular case, you know that she has committed adultery, so she becomes prohibited to the husband. Avoha, but in another case, hoil vasura kayoma. Inasmuch as she's not allowed to marry a goy at all, amalo, we would say then in that case the law of Seita doesn't apply. So kamashmonon, for this reason we learn that it makes no difference. Absolutely, it applies the same way. Okay. A posel petruma, and now this business with posel petruma, you know that you make truma, she make her invalid for truma. Pshita, isn't this obvious? About the time of Vas Kohen Kiseyeli Zor. Tosik says, you know, the daughter of a Kohen, if she goes and she has, you know, she becomes married or has relations with a stranger, Omer Achmona, Devar Havaya In, where she can actually get married to another man. Because remember I said that the Pshat of the Pasik doesn't mean, you know, all these different things. The original Pshat is what? She goes and she marries a man who is not a Kohen, that's all. This is the Pshat. So, you know, what if we say, you know, then that the Torah is talking only where she can be allowed to marry another person? After all, daughter of a Kohen can marry a Yisrael, she can marry a daughter of a Levi, you know, she's not prohibited from that. but the love bar havaya lo, but it wouldn't apply where she wants to marry somebody who is not, in other words, like a goy or something like that, or any of these other posel betruma that we mentioned. So kamash balon, no, the posel, that it's posel. Why? The Rabbi Yochanan, the Bar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, as Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, it says, "Benayin the yoyved koychovim." How do we know? than a goy, literally an idol worshiper. Okay, the eved or the slave shabo al hakahenes the al halavia the al basi soel, if they had relations with the daughter of the Kohen or the daughter of the Levi or the daughter of the Yisrael, shepsaluha, that they make her invalid as a result of their relationship. Shenemar, as it's written of Atz Kohen, ki siya almona grusha. Pasuk says, daughter of a Kohen when she becomes an almona or a divorcee. So, mi sheyesh lo almona spegerushin bo, right? Then, the daughter of a Kohen who can contract a legal marriage, and as a result, maybe she becomes a widow or she becomes divorced. But nevertheless, it was a legal marriage to begin with, right? So, Yotsu, Oive Kechovim, Vyevet, Sheinle Almonis Vigrishin Ba. So, therefore, from this we learn that she's not allowed to marry who? A goy or a slave, and therefore, if they're not allowed to marry, then how can we say that she is a widow or a divorcee? Of course, we're not talking about civil marriages. That's another problem. We're talking about religious marriages, okay? So, the elalim yutei mai. So, in that case, what are we excluding now? So, now we come to a business. What happens if a woman has intercourse with a beast? Telling you tonight, but we're really hitting. Boy. Triple X, maybe. Yeah. So.
Are you talking about a man who's a beast or just a.
No, we're talking about an animal. A real animal. A real animal. Right. Okay. I mean, look, the Torah certainly prohibits it, there's no question. Not only that, but you know, she's been warned and everything else and so on and so forth. I mean, the penalty for that is skilly, you know. It's no question about it. It makes no difference whether it's a man who's copulating with a beast or a woman who copulates with a beast, okay? But here, the technicalities. This is a technicality. What is a technicality? According to Rav Papa, he says that the fact that it says ish, this excludes what? A behemoth. So in other words, if he said to her, I forbid you to fool around with that animal over there, is it valid or not? The answer is no, it's not valid.
Not bad.
Because it only applies to human beings and not to animals.
So what you're saying is she can't have relations with them.
But from a practical point of view.
From a practical point, needless to say, she wouldn't, right. But from the point of view of the man, the man say, you have to drink the Mayim Achronim in order to prove to me? The answer is no. Okay, that's what it, so that's why it says, the ein znus b'behemo, because this business about znus, in other words, sinning with another man, doesn't apply with sinning to a beast. Obviously, it's not the right thing to do. The Torah, of course, condemns it very bitterly. But, so here we're dealing with a technicality. Oy.
What would happen if the woman was a lesbian?
He asked a good question.
She had a relation with another woman.
Yeah, right. Okay. The answer is that, again, it's frowned upon. It's frowned upon. It's considered fritzes. It's considered immodesty and so on and so forth. But
the Torah prohibits a man from
homosexuality.
Lying. Man says anything about a woman lying with a woman.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely true. Right. So it doesn't mean that lesbian, therefore, is to be encouraged. It's something that it's not subject to the same penalties as, a man who is guilty of homosexuality. Yeah. Omalei Rovavil Parzakia. A man by the name of Rovavil who came from the town of Parzakia said the Rav Ashi. It says, Menoah ho milso doma rabbonin swiss behemo. Says, where? How do you derive this business where the rabbis say that the law of znus doesn't apply to behema? In other words, if she copulated with a behema, that still she, cannot make a drink to my mamorim for this reason. Ditziv says, because it is written, again, very technical, it's written, lo sovi es dan zaino umichir kelef. Okay? So Pasuk Parsha Kisese in Devarim, which says that you're not allowed to bring Esnan Zona, which means literally what you pay for the services of a Zona, or Mechir Kelev, or what you pay as the price for a dog. So how do they explain it? And the rest of the pasuk is based on Shavon Lekecha, Lechol Neder. Not allowed to bring it to the house of the Lord for any kind of a vow that you make. You know, make a neder that you want to give and the dove to the, you know, that you want to give something to the Beis HaMikdash. You cannot do it with this. So Rashi explains that what do we mean by Esdan Zaino or Mechir Kelev? Esdan Zaino. A guy wants to have the services of a prostitute, right? So what does he give her for services? He gives her a lamb. Okay, that's the payment.
Can she bring that to the...
Can she bring that lamb, right, to the Beis HaMikdash, you know, and use it, let's say, for a sacrifice or whatever it may be, or something like that. So the Torah says no. The same thing, Mechir Kelev. What if, let's say, you sold a dog, and with it you bought a tola, you bought a lamb. Can you bring that? I had a teacher who was a Bible scholar and so on. He translated Mechir Kelev quite differently. It says, Esdan Zona, this is what you pay, you know, to the Zona, right? And that is no problem, you know. And you want to make that amount of money, you know, give us a contribution. Mechir Kelev, he says, this, he said, was a homosexual. Because they also had homosexual priests. Just as you had, for example, the worship of the Canaanites, the Baal, the Asherah, and so on and so forth, you had women who performed prostitution in the temple, and this was an act of piety, right? So likewise, you had men did the same thing, and I suppose women would come to them and pay them for the services, and that money was donated to the Canaanite temple, to the worship of the pagan gods. Mm-hmm. So this is how he explained it.
So Kelev is...
Kelev in this case is the male, right, and the Zona is the female who engulfs in the sacred prostitution. This is what they call that business.
Kelev's not a dog here, it's really...
Right, but this is not how our Chazal understood it. And of course, Rashi is interpreting how the Chazal understood it, so they applied it, as I said, to a lamb. Take a look over here in the Rashi and you'll see. Let's see, where is it down? It's not a long place over here. Right. Esdan Zaina. He says, Nosan Tola be Esdana. Right? That's way down. Yeah, I don't know. Can you see Esdan Zaina on yours? Okay.
Yeah.
So, right. He gave a lamb, right, as the price for her services. Mechir Kelev, says, Hechliv Kelev Betola. What he did was to exchange a dog for a lamb. So that's why I say this is a traditional explanation, but what I heard from you.
In that case, you cannot use the lamb as a...
That's right. The lamb is prohibited from doing. Okay.
Because of the dog involved.
Yeah. In other words, it was considered unworthy. Okay, it was considered unworthy. It's not fit to give us a korban in the Beis Hashem. Okay? So, it's written, as we said, now, the Tanya, now we have a Baraisa which says that Esnan Kelev Mechir Zoyna Mutorn. What if you reversed it? You said Esnan Kelev, right? In other words, the price for a Kelev, right? Mm-hmm. Take a look at the Rashi, that's the next line that they had in the Rashi. Over there, Esnan Kelev says, She'im Odom Oymer Lezoyna, right? If a man says to a prostitute, Hey Lichi Tole, here is a lamb, V'hibuali Lekalbi, and have relations with my, have intercourse with my dog.
Anyway.
You must have had a lot of perverts once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Or mechir zona, okay?
X.
Yeah, the price for a zona, right? We said before mechir keller, but now it's mechir zona. In other words, we reversed that. We took the word esdan and mechir, we used it with the opposites, right? So what is mechir zona? He says hoyes aloy shivcho zona. A man had a slave woman who he used
as a
prostitute, right? The chalifa betala, and what he do? He exchanged it for a lamb, right? The kaomar esdan kelev mutar neklal the labs nusu, and inasmuch as we said that if it's written esdan kelev, then it is permitted. So we see that this is not considered snus in this particular sense. The nusu have a chayal shem esdan, because if it were considered snus, then it would the term esdan would apply to it as well. All right. So getting back to the text, what he's saying over here is as follows, right? The Tanya, the Baraisa said esdan kelev mechir zayna mutorin. They are permitted. Now, why are they permitted? Shenemar, because the pasuk says ki savasar Hashem gam shenehem. Both of them are considered an abomination to the Lord, right? So, what do we mean gam shenehem? Shnayim, in other words, the two that the Torah mentions, esdan zayna mechir kelev, but nothing else. Velo arbo'o, not four. How would we get four? By simply exchanging the words, right? So we have four different things. But they say, no, only two are prohibited, nothing else. So, so what are we going to say? We're going to say, it's not a nice thing, but nevertheless, would it cause a man, you know, to divorce his wife or something like that? The brigand, you know, apparently, from a technical point of view, it doesn't apply. All right. So now we come again. I'm telling you, tonight we really have, we're burning hot over here. It's written in the Parshas Zona, in Parshas Sota, excuse me, that, right, V'shochav ish eso shichva sera, right? The man has slept with her, with shechva zera, in other words, you know, that he ejaculated his semen to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah. So, shechva zera, lo male, why do we need the word shechva zera over there? Could have been enough to say something, ish isa, right? The man slept with her. Why does it have to add the word shechva zera? You understand? So what do we need those two words? So it's maybe boyle, we need it, look at the Tanya. So we have a baraisa which says, why does it say shechva zera? It says prot ledover acher. That excludes something else. So the question is, so what does it exclude? My dover acher, what is this other thing? So Rav Sheshe said, prot l'shekine lo shelo kedarka. This excludes if he said to her, "You're not. I warn you not to have any kind of relations with this man, which is not the normal form of intercourse."
The normal form is okay.
The normal form. An abnormal form, in other words, would be okay. But not a normal form.
He
prohibits her from this.
Having the normal form.
No, unnatural. He prohibits her unnatural. From having an unnatural.
Oh, the unnatural.
Yeah, this is what he prohibits her, okay? So.
Having
natural. Right. So, shalok adark, in other words, it's not the normal way of having intercourse. All right, so, omale rabba, shalok adark, what are you talking about? Not natural. He says, mishkeve ishot. It's written in the Torah, "V'shochav ish eso mishkevei isha." This is, you know, in reference to various haroyas. Okay, so why does it say mishkevei isha? In other words, mishkevei already implies plural. In other words, more than one way of
unnatural.
Yes, of having sex with a woman. Elom a Rava. So Rava said, "Prot shakinei lo derech avorim." So obviously, you tell me whether it's natural or unnatural intercourse. It's intercourse. Period. That's obviously out. But what if he said to her, "Yeah, I prohibit you to have any kind of physical closeness to him." This is what it means by derech avorim. In other words, not actual sexual closeness, but yeah, closeness in some other way. Hugging, feeling, chvis, you know what I mean? Yeah. So Amalei Abaye, so Abaye said to him, Pritzusa the Almahu, right, says this is Pritzusa. In other words, it's not correct, you know, it's very immodest, it's scandalous behavior, and so on and so forth. But Pritzusa Mi'o'a Sarachmona, but the Torah here did not prohibit the Pritzus, in other words, this type of behavior. What it did prohibit is actual intercourse. So Elohim Abaye, so Abaye said, on the contrary, what this is prot shakinei lo b'nishiko. He prohibited her from kissing. So now the question is, what do you mean by kissing? This is the problem. Of course, we had a long time ago that the word neshika could also be used over here as a euphemism. So that's what we're going to discuss in a moment. He says, "Thodni kol amandu omar." If we go according to the opinion which says that ha'aroa zukin hachnosis atora, that, you know, ha'aroa, in other words, this is sexual excitement. Okay, so what is sexual excitement? So according to one opinion, it's that you actually put the tip of the penis inside the vagina. Avol neshika v'lo klum, but neshika doesn't amount to anything. Now what do we mean by neshika over here? It doesn't mean kissing. What it means is that, for example, you know, the man's genitals and the woman's genitals are close to each other, but there isn't actually any type of penetration, whatever. Okay? So, hainu the osikra, so in that case we can understand, you know, that the pasuk comes along, the mitzvah neshika, that it prohibits this too. Okay? Ela lamandu omar, but if you go according to the opinion of the omar, who says that ha'roa is neshika, that ha'roa also applies even to just this type of behavior, ma'yikol emeimar. So what can we say? So he says, le'olam, therefore we have to come to the conclusion, l'shekine lo derech avorim. All right? Well, he warned her that she shouldn't have any kind of a physical closeness to him. He didn't specify, you know, not to have any kind of sexual closeness, but not to have any physical closeness to her.
So she could be forced to drink the Maya Macaroni under those conditions, right?
No.
There was no intercourse.
No. That's the point, right. Well, Mao the Tamo, Bikfido the Baal, Talya Rahmoto. And are we to say then that therefore it's up to the husband to make a decision as to how to interpret the Torah? Well, Baal Hokov Kofit. And the Baal, he's the one who makes this determination. So Kamash Malon, that's not so. That what we have to do is to go on the basis of, was there really actual, physical contact, in the sense that, even in the sense of Ha'aroa, or even in the sense of Neshika, where, you know, the genitals were already placed, you know, next to each other, even though there was no penetration, that too would be prohibited. But to simply say, you know, any other kind of physical intimacy to prohibit, this would not disqualify her. So, Omash, all right, I think we'll stop at the bottom over here, and next week, Yitzhak Hashem, we will finish the Perek and go on to Kankanos. So today it was really, it was a sex lesson. And so
I think I have to expurgate that. That tape has to be.
Okay. Well, let's see. Today is the 18th of March. Baruch Hashem, we're happy to be meeting again after the break that we had due to illness and other problems. And of course, last week we were celebrating Purim at this time. So it's good to get together again and to continue where we left off. Yirtzeh Hashem, tonight we're going to finish this perek, Perek Al Rizo, and we start from the very last line on Daf Chavov Amid Beis. Omar Shmuel. Right, Shmuel said, Yiso Odom Duma, the Al Yiso Bas Duma. First of all, the word Duma itself, it's a very unusual word, but Rashi brings a quote that the word Duma means Nitenes, Nitberes, Befi Kol. In other words, she is the object of gossip on the part of all the people in the community al niyufeha, about the fact that this is a woman who is very loose in her behavior. And then he says Duma, the word Duma is Loshen Kalosa, it's equivalent to the idea of Kalosa, the Dibor, and also speech. The reason why I didn't translate the word Kalosa is because frankly it's a word that it undergoes various meanings. But if you remember, for example, in our davening, particularly on Monday and Thursday, we say Tihoyinu Lag Vokeles Bagoyim, right? In other words, we have become an object of scorn and ridicule among the various nations. So that this is what it is. This is a woman who has become the object of scorn and gossip in the community because of her loose behavior. So, and he brings a quote from Nido in order to prove that this is the meaning over here. Okay. But the funny thing is, you know, that the word is itself, the root, Kuf Lamet Samach, right? The word sometimes, however, takes on just the opposite meaning. Because Kalosa sometimes means praise. So it's like one of these things that you have a few words in Hebrew, right? Right. You have a few words in Hebrew that exactly can be used either in a negative sort of way or it can be used in a positive form of way.
Usually starts with right. a negative and then it changes to positive.
Right. Yeah.
You shouldn't leave a bad name.
So at any rate, what? Alayel Kaleis and so on. That means to praise, as you see. It's exactly what it is, so that's what I'm saying. All of a sudden, a word which meant something bad turns into something good instead. Yeah. Good evening, Bob. How are you? How's mother? Okay.
Still having problems.
Yeah. Is she still in Metaplex?
She's home. She's
oh, she's home now.
Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that you're busy taking care of her before you can come out over here. Yeah. Okay. Tell her that we wish her a foolish shleima. She's still on our Misha Berach list. Yeah. Okay. So, what Shmuel says over here is that a man should marry this type of a woman, a Duma.
Should a man?
He should. This is what he says. Or he may. Right. You're right. Okay. Should sounds like we're giving a recommendation. We're not giving a recommendation. Okay. So we retract it. We'll say a man may marry a woman who is a Duma, but he should not marry the daughter of a Duma. Okay? Why? Because he says, says because the woman who is the Duma, at least we know that she had kosher parents, so that therefore she herself might be still considered possibly a kosher woman, okay? Whereas her daughter already would be a very suspicious character because we may not be certain as to who the father of the daughter is, okay? So this is Shmuel's recommendation. However, we're going to see in the next line that Rabbi Yochanan, he has a contrary opinion. Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yochanan Omar says, Yiso Odom Bas Duma, the Al Yiso Duma. Says on the contrary, he may marry the daughter of a Duma, but he should not marry the Duma herself. Why? Shezua Melis Bechetzchatz Kashwas, because the daughter is still, can be considered, you know, she has the Chazoka. In other words, she is, the presumption is that she is still kosher. In other words, that she had kosher parentage, right? The zoo, but on the contrary, the Duma herself, she is no longer can be considered as being with the presumption of being a kosher Freud, because everybody in the community is talking about her loose style of living. Okay. Right. So. No. What he means is that actually, in other words, since she herself was born from parents who we, you know, respectable people, so that therefore she still has this presumption of being kosher. This is what Shmuel says about the Duma, right?
But how?
Second one, when he says Becheskas Kashrus, is about the daughter. No, it's about the daughter. Okay, all right, I see what you're saying. Yes, you're referring it to behavior. Okay, yeah, okay. Actually, both are right. I mean, because the daughter has not yet, you know, proven herself. I mean, she's not following in the way of the mother, although that's one of the reasons why Shmuel said before, you know, don't, because, you know, the daughter might follow in the way of her mother, and that's why he says, you know, don't marry Bas Duma, right? But Rabbi Yochanan, on the contrary, you know, he says it's just the other way around, because this woman, the Duma, by her own activities, you know, definitely is sort of beyond the realm of being an Isha Keshera, whereas the daughter, presumably, you say from the point of view of behavior, which is a good possibility, but also the question about her parentage. Because we'll see in a second what the halacha is over here. Okay? In other words, the latter one. In other words, the daughter, right? Is in the Chesed Kashrus, the zoo, but the other one, meaning the mother, ain't no known as the Chesed Kashrus. Okay? How do we know? Because that's his opinion. Right, okay. So they ask a Kasha on this. Why? Because they have a statement which says, Noisei Odom Duma, right? That a man should marry a Duma, or a man may marry a Duma. Thank you. So Omar Rava, right, the Rava said, the Tizbera, and it might make sense that, or you might think that, what do you mean? It says no say. Okay, here is the problem. The verb itself would indicate what? Would indicate lechat chila. In other words, no question, go right ahead, marry her, and so on and so forth. And that doesn't make any sense, right? So that for that particular reason, they're now questioning Shmuel's opinion, in order to reinforce the opinion that was already cited by Rabbi Yochanan. Because now we're going to see Ela Ibnosa, right? What we should learn is, if he married, so okay, then what? I mean, it's a bit of evidence, so he married. But it's not a recommendation, okay? So, they say, look, you're going to start in to correct it. Instead of saying Nosa, you say Im, right? Ibnosa. So why do you say Duma? Maybe it should be Bas Duma. Okay? The Hilchasa, and what is the Halacha? The Halacha is Yiso Odom Bas Duma. They are Yiso Duma. Right? The Halacha is that a man may marry the daughter of a Duma, but not marry the Duma herself. The Tani Rav Lachlifa Barba Rava, as Rav Tachlifa, who came, Bar Ma'arava means over here, it's not his father's name, but Ma'arava means he came from Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Because remember, this is the Talmud Bavli over here. So that therefore, when people came from Eretz Yisrael, they usually made a point of stressing that fact. Okay? Rav Tachlifo, a man who came from Eretz Yisrael, taught Kamei de Rabba Bohu in the presence of Rabba Bohu, he said, Isha Mizana. Now this is an important halach over here. It says that if a woman behaves in an adulterous fashion. Nevertheless, what? Her children are considered kosher. Why? Because rov de'ilos achar habal. Okay? Because it is assumed that a married woman, she has intercourse mostly with whom? With her husband. So that therefore he is the presumptive father of children that would be born to her. Even though her reputation is not so ayayay, but nevertheless the presumption would be that the children were born, you know, were the offspring of her husband, and so therefore they are kosher. Okay? Boy Rav Amram. So Rav Amram asked the following kasha. He said, "Hoy so prutza biyotzer. What if she was an extremely loose woman? In other words, you know, not that she had maybe one affair, but she had affairs all the time. Then in that case, mahu, what are you going to say? You're going to say that her offspring therefore are still kosher, or are you going to say that since she has affairs every month in Kedushin with different people, that the children's legitimacy is questionable?" So he says, "Alibo demanda Omar, in accordance with the opinion who says what?" Going to go into okay. Ein isha misaberes elasamech levesto, right? That a woman becomes pregnant only when it is close to her period. Question: now, when is a woman? When is the fertile period? Right. So one opinion says that the woman is most fertile just prior to her period. Okay. So he says lo siboy lecho. Then you shouldn't even have to ask this question. Why? Because the husband is not sure when she's going to get her period, and so therefore he's not watching her, and so presumably she can run around and do what she wants and fool the husband. So, but if the kasha would be aliba the mando Omar, in accordance with the person who has the opinion that ein isha misaberes ela samach tefilaso, that a woman does not become pregnant except when it is close to the time that she goes to the mikveh, which today, as a matter of fact, it's considered the more correct point of view. Okay, so my, so how can you know say that the children are suspect? Because kaven de yoda bo, since the husband knows when she's going to go to the mikveh, right? Then the Turin Mintalor, he's going to be careful to watch her. Naturally, I mean, he wants to have the privilege, you know. Oh, Dilma, or on the contrary, maybe we should say Kaven de Prutza Beyoser, since she is very, very loose, low. So the Gemara doesn't know what to answer. It says take her, remains in doubt. But nevertheless, we have to say, from the point of view of halacha, yeah. But from the point of view of halacha, the opinion that we had mentioned before, that a woman, the children of a woman, even though she's suspected, you know, of adultery, but nevertheless, the children are kosher because presumably her husband is the father of these children. This is halacha. Yeah. Yes, it's before DNA, correct. Okay. Right, exactly. Look, obviously they wanted to try to avoid the stigma of manzeres as much as they possibly could. Because as we know, it's a very difficult condition, since a manzer cannot, for practical purposes, according to the halacha, marry within the community of Israel. Have to marry another manzer or something like that. But the manzeres remains, you see. So that's very difficult. Yeah, I mean, it's a question with a gear and so on and so forth. Right, the Gemara in Kedushin mentions it. Right, that's a very, you know,
around,
right, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Now, we learned at the end of the Mishnah that sometimes the person himself cannot affect, you know, cannot, even though he's suspicious of his wife, but he's not in a position to, you know, to warn her, to be, you know, mekane, as we say, or kinei, right? In other words, to warn her, you know, not to associate, and so on and so forth. So the question is now, are there possibilities, maybe for the bezdin to step in and to act in place of the husband? And under what circumstances is it impossible? for the best thing to do it. Okay.
Because if she has all the money, he's afraid of challenge her, right? She's the wealthy one.
That was not at that time.
I'll tell you.
Her money belonged to him.
It all depends what we're talking about.
She came from a wealthy family with a big dowry.
No, it all depends. They have different types of possessions that a woman could have. In some cases, she could keep that money. Okay? In other cases, however, and this was the general idea, that whatever she earned with her money, this belonged to the husband. Why? Because after all, he's busy taking care of her. He's clothing her, he's feeding her, he's taking care of all her needs. So that therefore, in order to prevent hostility between husband and wife, so that therefore, whatever money the woman earned went to the husband.
Real chauvinistic.
I'm telling you what it was.
You're taking my money.
Right. But on the other hand, it was possible also to go before the Beis Din and try to arrange. I mean, for example, if she came in with...
If she inherited a lot of money from a parent,
right,
what happens to that?
Yeah, well, that could be set aside for her.
Okay.
It's possible. But you'd have to work out. There has to be a contractual...
If she had brothers, how could she inherit from the parents?
Well, that's a different story.
Maybe she doesn't
No. You forget that there's two different things. One of them is Yerusha. Yerusha, you're right. Yerusha goes first to the sons, right? And the daughters don't get the Yerusha, but on the other hand, the sons have the obligation to support the daughters.
Doesn't it go to the brothers also after the sons?
Well, that's if there are no. Okay, now we're talking about a different story. I mean, that if let's say there are no children to inherit, so then already it goes to the brothers of the deceased and so on. That's correct.
Brother, if there are no brothers, if there are no male children,
right, then it goes to the nearest relative.
Could be the parents.
No, the daughters I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the daughter, of course. I mean, if there are daughters and no sons, in that case, the daughters inherit, absolutely. So you have different setups, okay? But that's one aspect. The other aspect is that a person during his lifetime can give gifts to his children. He could give gifts to his daughter to his heart's content if he
wants. That's what the Rothschilds said.
Yeah.
The sons, the daughters were never heirs, but they gave to the daughter.
Yeah. So, you see...
It doesn't get in.
Right. There are many, many complications and so on. I mean, it's not, that you can make one rule and say, that's it.
There were no such things as wills in those days, huh?
Yeah, of course, people made sabot. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Of course. You have Gemaras that deal with this. I mean, sabot is somebody who is, deathly sick, a shiv miroz, we would say, and so on. And, he dictates it, that the best thing can carry out his desires if he makes known to them, and things like that, and so on. And, the question about witnessing these things and writing it down, and what do you write it down on, and so on, so there'll be a permanent record, and so on. But definitely, will is definitely part of the law in the Talmud. Yeah. Of course, afterwards, they've also developed what we call ethical wills, where people, before they died, from the greatest rabbonim, that they would write an ethical will to the children, how they should live their life after they're gone and so on, right?
I saw one from the late 1700s, early 1800s from a family in Switzerland.
Yeah.
He would look very hard.
Yeah.
Always give Martha. Don't forget to support Carlos,
etc.
And that is
shorter. Right. People would write them, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Tana Rabbanan. Rabbis taught as follows. First of all, Ish. A man, right? So he says, Matam and Loimar. Not only that, but the word ish kisista ishto. This is how the parak of Sotah starts, right? That a man if his wife goes astray, right? So the question is, why does it say ish? So the rabbos, the answer is, it's to include the following cases. All right, case number one, eishes cheresh, right? The wife of somebody who is deaf and dumb. This is the usual translation for the word cheresh, although we sometimes use it simply in the sense, a person who can't hear anything, right? But in the Gemara, we're talking about somebody who is both deaf and dumb. No, we're talking about a man.
A man who's
right.
deaf and dumb.
Right. But Eish is Cheresh. If, you know, a woman is married to a man who is deaf and dumb, then in that particular case, it's obvious that there's not going to be any drinking of the Mayim HaMorim. Doesn't work, all right? Who else? The Eish is Shoyte. The wife of somebody who has become, Meshuggah, okay? The Eish HaShemim is somebody who is not altogether Meshuggah, but still, it's not quite, compus mentis, as we would say, right? Or the Shoholach Balul Mdinas Hayom, the wife of a man who has gone on a long journey. That's what they mean by the Mdinas Hayom, has gone over the Mediterranean, over the Atlantic, who knows where, right? Or in case of the wife of a man who was imprisoned. So in all those cases, what do we learn? All right? The Bezdin has the power to warn the wives when they notice that the wife, is misbehaving. That they have the power to give the warning to her. And what is the practical effect if they give her the warning? And then, of course, obviously she disobeys it, right? Because some to give a warning, but then, she behaves and doesn't misbehave from that point on, and we're not talking about anything, okay? But let's say she defies what the Bezdin said and she misbehaves. So in that particular case, they have the power to cause her to lose her ksuba. That's what they mean, the first limit ksuba. In other words, if she tries to collect the ksuba, she can't collect anything because of her indecent behavior. That we learned before already. That when a man is, he's suspicious of his wife, right? So what happens, if she, Haka, is not innocent? If she's not innocent in that particular case, she forfeits the ksuba, and of course he gives her a divorce.
Right.
Okay, this is what the rule is. Okay.
Why would she be asking for a divorce? Asking her to put the ksuba here.
Because maybe she figures that the man isn't around.
Yeah, so he's never going
to
come back.
Well, it may not come back. She would like to collect, maybe something like that. But the answer is no, she can't collect. And the ksuba is, she's. She loses it simply for the reason that, she misbehaved. She defied the Bezdin and misbehaved. So, the Gemara now says, Yochel af Hashkaisan. So, may we assume also then that the Bezdin has the power to cause her to drink the Mayim HaMorim in order to prove her innocence? So, Talmud Lomar, no. The Torah says, the Hevi Ho'ish Esishto. The man has to bring his wife. In other words, the Bezdin cannot take her up to Yerushalayim and
there's no concept of Mekaneh.
Right.
He doesn't know.
No, Mekaneh, yes.
But he doesn't know about it.
Okay. Yeah.
He may.
Maybe a rumor reached him or something, but we don't know.
It could be written to him in a letter. It could be,
To the letter that I'm.
Or if he's deaf and dumb, they can make.
Well, obviously, all right.
Huh?
He can
still see, right?
Yes, he can see. Of course, the question is, but can he warn the wife? You see, this is it. He has to say specifically, "Don't do this," and because he's a cheresh, he's deaf and dumb, he can't do it.
Could he write Should he write that?
Well, that's a question. You have to understand that the word cheresh has various implications. The worst implication is what I said. But if a person can write, give a simonim or something like that, or maybe he's able to speak even though he can't hear or something like that. We know that there are people like that too. Yeah, it's a possibility, right? Yeah. So in that case, it's not quite the same story. You see. All right, but here is, we see, they're trying to establish the fact that even though the Bezdin has the power to cause her to lose the ksuba because of her misbehavior, but nevertheless they cannot bring her to Yerushalayim because that's only the husband who can do it. No, Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi, Mary says, Aflash Kaisa, says, no, the Bezdin also has the power to cause her to drink. Ukshayetse Balo Mbes Hasurim Yashkenu. In what way? That when the husband finally gets out of prison, so in that case, then he can take her up to Yerushalayim, because they have already given warning to her before, so that warning is good. He didn't have to give her the warning. That's a valid warning, okay. But if she wants to prove her innocence, then after he gets out of prison, he can take her to Yerushalayim, know what to do. This is his opinion, right? The Michael Miflage, what is the point of issue between the rabbis and Rabbi Yossi? Excuse me. So Rabbanon Savre, the rabbis were the opinion that the Inon, we require the Kine the Hevi. Both of these actions require the husband. Pardon me. He is the one who has to give the warning to her not to seclude herself with so and so, right? And he is also the one who has to take her to Yerushalayim. That's how they interpret it. Rabbi Yossi Sova, Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion, lo be'inim v'kine v'hevi. We don't require that according to him, and that's the reason why he says the Besen can give the warning, and if the husband gets out, then, you know, it's good enough so that they can take her over there.
It only apply if he's in prison.
Right. The other cases, he's not disputing the fact that what? That while the Besen can give a warning, but nevertheless, there is no such thing as bringing her to Yerushalayim and giving her the Mayim Hamori. Okay. Tana Rabba. It's written, Asher Tiste Isha Tachas Isha. Why does the Pasuk say if the woman commits, that is, goes astray, literally, under her husband? Because we already interpreted Tachas Isha in another way, that we said before at the beginning of this particular chapter that Tachas Isha means that she actually has to be married and living together with the husband for this business, to take place. But we learned to the beginning of the chapter is called Arusa, and the next one is the Shemeres Yovam, and we said that as long as she was betrothed but not yet living with him, then there is no such thing, right? And the same thing in the case of the Shemeres Yovam, the woman who's waiting for the brother-in-law either to give a chalitza or else, to marry her, take her in and start to live together, so as long as that hasn't taken place as yet, then okay. But we learned that, Tachas Isha means that she's actually living together with the husband already. That's when he has the power to do this, otherwise not. So now, we're giving a different interpretation. We're using the same pasuk, but for a different reason. Okay? What are we saying? Why does it say, I should just say, Isha Tachas Isha? In other words, why are the two combined in the same pasuk? So he says, the Hakish Ish Li Isha, the Isha Li Ish. It's in order to compare a man to a woman, and a woman to a man. The Mai Hilchasa. What is the halacha? What halacha do we learn from this comparison of man to woman, of husband to wife? So Amar Rab Sheshes, Rab Sheshes says, Kishem, just as Sheim hu sumo lohoya mashke, let's say if he were blind, so he has no authority to do what? To take her to Yerushalayim and cause her to drink the Mayim Hamorim. Why? Because obviously he can't see what's going on. So how could he even, be Makane and everything else? And so since he can't see. So that's the case.
So he can hear.
Yeah, he could hear, right. He could hear rumors. Right, he can hear rumors. Okay. Correct. But the point is that physically he's not able to find his way to Yerushalayim right now. Okay. All right. No. Don't work. Okay. If he is blind, so he cannot cause her to drink the Mayim Hamorim, Dichsiv, as it is written, v'ne'alam y'enei isha. In other words, she is secluded, she is hidden literally from the eyes of her husband. So obviously if the husband doesn't have eyes that can see, so that's out of the picture. So, kachu, so likewise he, im ho'yiso sum lo ho'yiso shoyiso. That, let's say, a man who is sighted marries a woman who is blind. So likewise, he can't force her to go and to drink the Mayim Hamorim either. Okay? So that's the Hakish Ish Li Isha. The same rule applies to both husband and to wife. So that if one of them is blind, then there is no Mayim Hamorim. Okay? Well, it's fine.
It doesn't compute my mind.
It doesn't compute my mind. Okay, no.
I mean, why?
I mean,
if
this
the woman
is equality.
If the woman is blind, she can go astray. She can.
Yeah, but they can't cause her to have the Mayim Hamorim because she can't see what's going on over there.
The whole thing is to see what's going on.
She, right, exactly. Just as he has to see what's going on, she has to see what's going on. Okay? All right, so that's what we say. This is a case of equality, okay? Yeah.
One place of equality.
Right. Rav Ashi Yomar, Rav Ashi says, Kishem Shechi Geris V'Gidemes L'Hoyes O'Shoysa, just as a woman who is lame, or a woman who has, let's say, a hand cut off, or something like that. Yeah, Gidem, okay? Could not drink the Mayim Havorim, obviously, why not? Because if she's lame, how is she going to walk to Yerushalayim? Okay?
She has to walk.
Yeah, and if she is, she's missing a hand or something, how is she going to hold the basket and the Minchas Kenoris and everything? She can't do it. So therefore, she is excused from this, right? Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, Dehem Yid HaKoyin Es Yishof Nei Hashem, right, that the Kohen is to cause the woman to stand before the Lord, and obviously, you know, if she's a figueres, if she's lame and she has trouble in standing, right? Vinosan al kapeha, and he puts on her hands, as we said before, you know, the minchas kanois, right? So she's missing a hand, it's not going to help. So kachu, so likewise he, what? Imboyo chiger, if he was lame, o gidem, or if he was missing a hand, so loyem ashke, then in that case you cannot have her drink the Mayim Hamorim. Ma b'Rav Ashi Yomar said Hishem she'ilemes lohayisoshesa, just as a woman who cannot speak, okay, she's mute, she cannot speak, so she doesn't also she doesn't drink the Mayim Hamorim. Why? Because we have a pasuk, the Siv, which says we omro isha. Omein, omein. The woman has to say omein, omein. In other words, she is accepting upon herself the oath that is being administered to her by the Kohen, right? And she can't do it. So likewise, in Hoya Elaim, if the husband was mute, so also Lo Hoya Mashke. Okay. So with that, we come to the end of the fourth perek, Arusa, and now we're going to start the next perek, the fifth perek.